Welcome to the Heartland Journal's Tennessee Podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, Editor-in-Chief of HeartlandJournal.com.
Howdy, I'm Steve Abramowitz, and this is the brand spanking shiny and new Heartland Journal's Tennessee Podcast. I am your host and Editor-in-Chief of the HeartlandJournal.com and Daily E-Newsletter. Please check it out and subscribe so if they ever deplatform me again, I can continue to communicate with you. It's still free. As before, we are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. We've got the remnants also of the allergy voice in Tennessee. Sorry about that. But welcome to our Heartland People in the News segment, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with a guest, Austin Davis. As the BaptistNews.com website put it, Nashville is a city infused by religion, music, and history. So when a tragedy like the school shooting at the Covenant School, March 25th, 2022, happens, connections ripple across well-known names and places, and in this case, also across some unknown history that makes things complicated to comprehend. The Covenant School is affiliated with Covenant Presbyterian Church, a Presbyterian church in America congregation situated in the Tony South Side of Nashville, just down the road from Bluebird Cafe, one of the city's best-known live music venues. The Covenant School is a small private Christian school enrolling about 200 students in preschool through sixth grade. Tuition is about $16,000 a year, more expensive than a year of college at the University of Tennessee. The school was founded in 2001. Covenant Church, one of the leading PCA churches in the South, and its denomination represent the more conservative side of Presbyterian life in America today. The PCA was formed in the 1970s as a breakaway group from the better-known Presbyterian Church USA, mainly over the ordination of women, which the PCA opposes. Austin Davis grew up in Natchez, Mississippi, where his grandfather worked as a dairy farmer. "My grandfather was the closest example to Jesus I will ever see on this planet," Austin says. A former Covenant Presbyterian deacon and church member and a former Covenant School father and what he never thought he'd be, a child sex abuse whistleblower. Austin and his family resigned from the church in 2006 after receiving unsatisfactory answers about the safety and welfare of vulnerable children. And brave enough to come on the HLJ to make sense of all this. Austin, are you there? How are you handling this electric storm and tornado watch today?
I'm here, and I really appreciate you, Steve, having me on your show. And you'll be the, this will be the first podcast I've been on kind of that's locally in Tennessee. So anyway, thank you very much.
Well, I'm honored you would come on and spend some time with us and tell us the story. It's a terrible story, but before we get into it, you know, last week was the one-year memoriam of the Covenant Presbyterian shooting, where transgender person Audrey Hale killed six. We're going to talk about that and much more. But before we do, tell us what you've gone through to be a whistleblower or someone trying to get the truth out as you see it to protect innocent kids. We've had whistleblowers on before and people fighting against sex trafficking, and this story is very different. Am I right? You lost your ability to earn a living and all your support group and church friends of many years?
Correct. And, one thing I just wanted to say, and this is not easy to talk about any of it, especially when you were, I actually created the Covenant School seal, and my daughter was in the first class along with the shooter. And there's no justification for anything that's happened. And I wish to express my condolences to the, to the families, to the kids that survived such an ordeal, to all the families in there. We're cut off and banned and out of that community, but it's all complicated. But anyway, I just wanted to say that before I started to answering a bunch of questions. It's I love kids. I coached kids forever. Kind of a kid at heart, but you know, we ought to all be trying to protect kids, and I do care about them. And so I just wanted to say that before we start, you know, getting into some tougher things to talk about and answering questions about, you know, what happened to me. It's, you know, I'm a grown man. I'm pretty tough person. I've been able to absorb a lot of what's come at me, but anyway, I still am concerned about these kids.
And you asked us not to show you on video Rumble, so we're honoring that. So anyone wondering why it's just me, that's why. Let's talk a second about local media. The Tennessean is Tennessee and Nashville's largest circulation newspaper. Only the Tennessee Star I could find covered you. That's an online news source in a lot of other states too, but owner Michael Patrick Leahy, who invited me on his show the first month I moved here, so I appreciate him, lives in Nashville. Tell us how you feel about the press coverage on child sex abuse here in Tennessee.
Oh, well, it's non-existent. I mean, other than some blogger, Ray Burleson's a blogger that came here to town back in, I think it was 2015, and started reporting on it. He was a Southern Baptist child sex abuse advocate about all the abuse that was kind of going on in the Southern Baptist Church. When he found out about it, he came here, and I just got a phone call, surprised me one day, and we went out and met Franklin at a restaurant. And then he spent a couple of days here, but like, it's blocked. I mean, they're not going to report on it. I refer to them if you've, you know, we have a Twitter site called at BuzzFeed Source, but I just refer to it as Tokyo Rose. It's almost like we have media that is not, it's almost like doing stuff to us. It's, you know, it's gaslighting or whatever. They're reporting things that make us all dislike each other, hate each other, or fight each other, but then like to protect our kids and those kind of things. I mean, we're getting people killed in Nashville. I think media is a large part of it because they don't report what's going on. They're blocking stories. And these are important stories that moms and dads that have kids in schools need to know about, and they're not getting told. And your podcast today is the first, I mean, it's the first move into this area. So
maybe Austin, you can explain this to me then. Right now, everyone is going crazy in the news over Sean P. Diddy Combs and possible child trafficking, which ropes in Jay-Z, Beyonce, his ex-wife, J-Lo, Ashton Kutcher, just like Epstein with politicians and Weinstein, which kicked off the whole hashtag MeToo movement in Hollywood. And there was a movie that won awards, Spotlight, about Boston Globe breaking the news on the Catholic Church, you know, like Latter-day Woodward and Bernstein, the Washington Post and Watergate. You can Google those stories and every outlet covered them. Why do you think mainstream, left-wing, right-wing, moderate, nobody wants to know about this story? It has it all. Christianity, children, hypocrisy, death. Phil at Channel 5 should be all over it. Why do you think they're not?
I think some. I mean, I think there have been reporters along the way. I mean, it's been going. The police were used on me in 2008 during that presidential election. And we're now about, I think we're getting ready to head into number five. So I've talked to people, Maggie Haberman, and I communicated at the New York Times, the Washington Post. I mean, the all the legacy media, right wing media, conservative, it hadn't mattered. I mean, they all, you know, looked at it, done things, but then it doesn't get, I mean, other than BuzzFeed writing out a story in 2015, it's blocked. I was told, you know, the last couple of days, some places where it's blocked, and there have been meetings going on about it. Why? Yeah, I have my own, I may get into it a little later, I may think more about it, I'm not sure today, I don't know how deep down the rabbit hole we want to go, but
you only have 35 minutes, so as deep as you're willing to dig.
Well, I think that I've had that question. I haven't known. Like, I know it's at a governmental level because I've appealed to the, you know, to the, I mean, this isn't, this isn't like some individuals doing this. The Nashville Police Department is in deep in this cover up, and they were the ones that threatened my family back in 2008. You know, I couldn't go talk to anybody. If I did, I was going to be arrested and all this. And I didn't know even about the child molestation in 2008. I was asking questions about kids, and some had been put in a safe house, but I didn't know that there was actual child sex abuse. I was concerned that there might be, but I had no proof. And so, but I did find out later on that there was, and it's a fact. And so that's when the 2015 story came out. So the sex abuse occurring with somebody at the church, and that person is John Perry, who's a big, a prominent Southern Baptist biographer and Christian writer for a lot of well-known people.
I think he wrote a book for Mike Huckabee and maybe Judge Moore down there in Alabama.
Yeah, Judge Moore in Alabama. And Chuck Colson, he wrote books about him, Chuck Colson from Watergate. And
so why did we bring him into the story? He was an author for Southern Republicans, and how does he fit in here?
I'm sorry?
How does he fit in here?
He's the molester.
He's the molester from Covenant.
Yeah, from Covenant. He was a deacon with me at Covenant. And we were both deacons.
So you posted on Twitter. You posted on Twitter yesterday, so you're public with this. Have police, DA Funk, Sheriff Hall, Covenant leaders, or members of the Covenant Church school community told Brink Fiddler about the John Perry Police Covenant Tokyo Rose child sex abuse cover-up, which is still ongoing 1 year after the mass shooting? You said it already, but who do you mean by Tokyo Rose, and why would Brink Fiddler, now retired as director of the drug task force in Nashville, care about this case? Who is he really?
He's the head. He was the one that did the training of the bad guy training shooting preparation that they started doing. They did the training in January of 2022. He said he was contacted in the fall of 2021, but he's the ex-Metro police officer for 18 years. And he was director of the Nashville drug task force. And so they brought him in to do shooter training, and it was bad guy drills that these little kids that were at the school were being taught. Now, they had no security up there when this happened, and they did have security when they had me arrested back in 2015, and they had an armed security guard at the church that arrested me. So, they're covering the church, but they didn't cover the school. But then they brought this guy in. And so the reason I'm asking that question is I want to know, if he talked to any of these people about all this stuff that's gone, does he know that I was actually convicted and went to jail as a Sandy Hook shooter threat to the Covenant school? I was when the day when the shots fired out, and it was a person in a white male in camouflage, I'm the number one guy in town that had been previously convicted of being a Sandy Hook shooter threat to the school. And so I can guarantee you, because I've gotten calls even the last day or two where people are telling me how their phone rang that morning. And everybody said, "Oh my God, Austin's gone crazy and gone and shot the school up."
So prior to last year when this happened, they had accused and arrested and incarcerated you as a potential school threat?
Correct. Sandy Hook shooter threat. That was some of the testimony that was given by a federal judge in my trial, which was not covered by the media.
Were you tried and proven innocent or convicted? How did that?
No, I was convicted.
You were convicted.
I was convicted of aggravated criminal trespass on behalf of the Covenant School and the Covenant Church, but the school was in it because I was considered a danger and threat to the children at the Covenant School.
Why did they think that?
Because I had been asking questions about child sex abuse forever, and an article had come out in the BuzzFeed before I was arrested about the child sex abuse that I had finally identified in 2015. And so the wrath of hell came down on me, and I got arrested, and then I got prosecuted.
Wow.
And convicted.
Okay.
And so ended up going to jail.
I think that leads into this then. So there's a gentleman named Jack Smith, who was the Middle Tennessee U.S. attorney in 2017. That same Jack Smith is the one on a hunt to destroy Donald Trump in New York, right?
Correct.
You, You released a 680-page link, which includes much new information, sworn testimony, police reports, videos, court reportings, photographs, emails, you name it. In it, there's a major question you're trying to answer. Did President Trump or his Attorney General Bill Barr order Middle Tennessee U.S. Attorney Jack Smith to turn a blind eye to the child sex abuse cover-up at the Covenant School and Covenant Presbyterian Church? If President Trump is a participant in the Covenant child sex abuse cover-up, or if he gave an order for Jack Smith to protect the cover-up, President Trump will have a major problem on his hands prior to the 2024 presidential election, you say, which here we are. But if President Trump did not participate in the Covenant cover-up or did not order Jack Smith to turn a blind eye to the cover-up, Jack Smith has a major problem on his hands. Where are we with all that?
Well, I mean, I think Jack Smith's got a major problem on his hands as far as I'm concerned, because I could actually send things to him because he was the U.S. attorney over the same jurisdiction, the Middle Tennessee jurisdiction that D.A. Funk is in. And, you know, as a citizen, you don't really understand. These guys know each other. They work on cases together. One's at the local state level or whatever, and the other one's at the federal level. But they're in there for 2 or 3 years and working as in the U.S. Attorney's office and in the D.A.'s office. They're going to – I mean, I don't know them. I'm not working with them and doing things. But in law enforcement, those guys are. So as I was writing emails and screaming and yelling about what was being done to me in Davidson County in the criminal court system by Judge Casey Moreland that Jack Smith had – actually a prosecutor, or they had him arrested. He was the judge that turned me over and had me indicted. And then I had two indictments. The second one had the Covenant Arms security guard was on my secret grand jury session that indicted me the second time. Then I went to court and got tried, and that one's rigged, no doubt. And so when Jack Smith gets up in front of the world and says, there's no one above the law, law applies to everybody, applied to everybody but me. And I got a big taste of what was allowed to go on in Davidson County under his watch. And I was begging and pleading him to intervene and stop the corruption.
Right. But so to be clear.
And then he resigned from his office in early September. And my trial began on September 11, 2017. And then he was gone.
Oh, he wasn't
and then
even
shows
in the
up later on to start indicting an ex-president, and pretty much get us on the course having a civil war if we're not careful, because they've, you know, and I'm not going to say anything. I mean, I'm not picking political sides or anything, but all of us in America should have a impartial judge, impartial, you know, fair juries, all that. And I didn't get any of that. We don't have that anymore. I don't know what's going on with everybody else, but I just know what I've gotten. And I can kind of watch and see what's happening with Trump, and I don't think he's getting much of a fair shake either.
Yeah, and to be clear, you don't know if Trump and Smith were in a conspiracy together or not, which is why you're asking these questions. Why did Jack
yeah,
Smith and his office
I
ignore your
this,
pleas?
But I would think that if Smith was had been ordered that, I would think he would be using that against Trump and prosecuting him for it, because he would have been under some duress or doing it. But I don't know the answer to that question. I have no idea what Trump's been told, if he's been told anything.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were him and I knew what was going on with me down here and there's seven, well, let's see. Yeah, there's seven dead in the building at Covenant. I would be wanting to know what went on at Covenant and what's happened here and why was this guy screaming so loud. And I would be trying to find the answer to that question if I were Trump.
Right. And why would Jack Smith maybe get an incredible opportunity during the very same month that your trial took place in September 2017 that he resigned for? Now, you know Jennifer Conlin and Alexander Wills, both intrepid reporters from outside Tennessee now. Wills was in Tennessee. They're all interested in this case and more, and both have been on the show. Why did Wills include in a photo that didn't have former CIA and State Department head Pompeo in it, but a line that said, not shown, when talking about Steve Berger and Grace Church? Do you think it could be related to like the federal state partnership at that time?
I, I, I think there are people. I mean, I don't know why. I you know, if you anybody goes to www.thesilentbell.org, which is my site, I have a couple sites have already been shut down. I had to take them down off the internet by injunction. But anybody looks at my site, I'm just a citizen. I love America, and I want, you know, good things for everybody in it. That possibly be as free a country as we can have. A key to that is the way the law and the order is done and adjudicated. But as far as putting things out, I don't try to hold back if I'm putting pictures out and things, because I want people to see what's going on. And I think that, you know, Governor Lee and Pompeo and Steve Bird are all sitting there at the table together. So if you look at my stuff, you'll see those pictures. I put out the information. But, you know, he may have worked for a newspaper that didn't want him putting that in there, maybe. And that was the way he found the way to get in there. I don't know. I don't work for anybody other than my own citizen, you know, voice that I have. But I think that, you know, some pretty powerful people that are in government that have connections to the people in Nashville. There's a lot of power here. Governor Lee's a very, you know, powerful governor. And I don't know all what they've been told. I'm pretty hard on them. I'm a hard critic. If anybody wants to start talking to me or finding out what's going on, like in the Grant Solomon murder, it's a brutal murder. I know there are people saying it didn't one. It's an accident, but I've looked at it pretty hard. That's a brutal murder. And so I think that, and it's connected to the Covenant case. There's a spider web of things going on here in town and boards and people and churches. And we got to figure out, look at some of that. And we got to get some things corrected in the city, because we've had Pandora's box opened. And every mom and dad that's got a kid anywhere needs to be concerned that they can go to the head of the school or go to a school board and tell them my child got raped or my child, this happened to them, and that people are going to respond and not go make Angie Solomon the pariah in the community, or me the pariah. Or they've got to know that there's going to be a little more uprightness going on. We don't have that right now, I don't think.
We did a whole show on that with Lauren Conlon. Lauren. Jennifer Conlon. And it's crazy.
Lauren Conlon. You're talking about Lauren, right?
Yeah, I am talking about Lauren. Sorry, I'm confusing them. Yeah. But Governor Bill Lee, Attorney General Jonathan Scrimeti, and the Tennessee General Assembly, you say, are holding back information from you. Are they still?
Well, I mean, we've communicated. I've seen him a couple of times, gone over with my daughter, walked over. I mean, we've talked to him, we've written. I mean, I've contacted, if anybody would go in and start reading the transcripts of a lot of the cases that are on there, you know, the federal judge is going to be there complaining. He's contacted the people in D.C. and the, you know, state, the metro council, the mayor of I've contacted all the mayors over about, you know, four or five last mayors we've had in Nashville. The police. I have done what I think any citizen should do, and that is communicate with their elected leaders. I just happen to be one that none of them want to pay attention to, and they want to retaliate against and destroy my life in order so I can't earn a living or you know, go to church or have any of the regular freedoms anybody else has. It's like the government declared war on a citizen, and I've been fighting back. I'm losing and have been beaten severely, but I'm still standing on one foot, even though I broke my ankle the night that I filed the intervene motion in the Covenant Manifesto case. I went down there and fired out on February 12th and then had a really bad accident on the way after I got back home and ended up in the hospital. So
No, that's okay. That was the night the parents group, I believe, challenged the powers that be, the police, to reopen the Grant Solomon case. And that's what you're talking about, right?
No, I'm talking about when I went down, I filed a motion, an intervene motion in the open records Covenant Manifesto case.
Oh, okay. Okay. We'll dig into that in just a second then. Okay. So the Tennessee Star, like I said, one of the only ones I could find that did a thorough review of this, They called you a former Covenant Presbyterian deacon and church member and a former Covenant school father who also purports to be a child sex abuse whistleblower. The Tennessee man claimed to face retaliation for the claims he made against the school. The former deacon and his daughter, I don't know if you want me to say her name or not. I won't. Who he claimed was a classmate of Hale in the early 2000s, previously sued the church in 2013 with claims it concealed the crimes of a confessed child molester in a cult-like fashion, placed children in the predator's safe house. That's serious stuff. Is it a cult, and did they place children with monsters?
Well, it's acting like a cult. I mean, I think that as an officer in the church, I didn't believe I belonged to a cult. But when you get to where people dominate you, or they don't have the open freedom and access to communicate and to raise your hand, ask a question, or to bring something up with other people, and they start using the police on you, it's like Jonestown or something. I mean, they start doing things like that, commandeering children, put them over and safe houses for 30 days where their parents don't know, where the father doesn't know where his kids are. People don't sign up for that when they go to church. They're going to church, they want to go, but they don't realize that the people they're surrendering their life to and their will and the most precious things, their confession of sin, whatever it may be that they do, that's a real intimate spiritual nature. They don't realize that there's abusive people that are gonna hurt them when they're in there. That's not a safe place. And so I think covenants, I will say this, and this is about the school. In my motion, I asked the judge to protect, and Wally Dietz, who I went to school with, we grew up together, and he's the Metro National lawyer, asked them to use their powers to protect those kids to Covenant School. I personally think Covenant School, they're talking about moving those kids back in there in April. I don't know if they've done it yet or not. They're waiting after the anniversary, but that school has been covering up child sex abuse. It's not been honest. It's for years, and they need to close it. It's a dangerous place. It's unsafe, and it's especially unsafe with all the attention on it. And it's the parents over there, and they need to. I mean, I hate to say it, but they got to protect their children. That is not a place that anybody should be going back into.
Yeah, my notes
My
say
opinion.
that children are returning to the Covenant campus for the first time since the killing this month, April 2024. And you say that they are not safe. So it's not safe because the roof leaks, or not safe because there are dirty rats running around, like in, say, a New York City public school that you're talking about. They're not safe because the people who there that are running it are a danger to the children, even more so than a transgender activist coming in with automatic weapons.
Well, I mean, that there may be outside forces too, but the inside forces and the police. The biggest part is the police and the media. Everybody can mess up out here and do things, but we need people that can correct us. Everybody needs to have some kind of balance and stuff. But when you get the police and they're as rotten and corrupt as I think they have been, and when I see them all over that building up there the day of the shooting and the way those guys were standing out in front of the building answering the questions, they're the last people in the world who should be even up there collecting the evidence. I wouldn't let those guys near those journals. When she was
Interesting.
writing what she was saying to her friend, and she sounded pretty sober-minded, and then she said, this is going to be bad, and the last thing she said was, "Forgive me." And I think Audrey knew what she was going in to do. And then you see the manifesto pages that got released, which I personally, they may be real. I don't know. I don't trust it. Came from police officers supposedly. Or out of the police part, I just don't. I don't trust it. I just because they don't deserve to be trusted because they haven't been honest about everything that's gone down in there up to this point. So that's the problem when you're having investigations, and the law enforcement and the people that are supposed to be carrying them on aren't doing their job, and they're not upright, and they're not doing it the right way. How are any of us supposed to be safe and all that? We got the
Right.
kid that went in the river over down here, Raleigh. The parents come from Missouri, and I had a bad feeling about him when he disappears, and then they find him. Now they've done another. I mean, they went back and didn't trust. They had another autopsy done. That's bad for Nashville. We need a better police department. We need something major to happen in Nashville,
I think they just
and at
passed
high
a
level.
law out of the committee that the children will no longer have autopsies if a murder is suspected, which I don't really understand
Oh.
either. You asked the court to allow or compel the testimony of a group of current and former Covenant parents, administrators, Metro PD police officers, and government officials to testify. This has been my big question. Where are the victims? Where are the parents who would want the truth other than the ones who we've seen talking at the Capitol about gun control and red flag laws? Where are the victims? How come we don't hear anything about the people that this is happening to?
What victims of we got lots of victims. Some of them are before this, and then some of them are after this. And I'm talking about Covenant community as a whole. There've been victims prior to, I mean, not murder victims, but I'm talking about victims of the abuse and other
Okay.
things. So which victims are you saying?
Any victims, really, but the ones alive, of course, but even the parents of the ones who aren't alive. And I don't mean this, the three who
Yeah.
passed away at to her hands, but you're talking about a long-term systemic problem at a school that probably has filtered over to the Leapers Fork Grace School as well, that I just don't see a lot of whistleblower children or victims coming forward. A lot of times we see
Well,
that. That's what happened with the movie Spotlight, where the Catholic Church in Boston was kind of outed after decades and decades of abuse. Where are the victims' voices?
I think most of them have seen what's happened to me. I think a lot of them are scared. I think that there are people coming out of the woodwork here at some point in time. But when you look and see what somebody like me, who used to go to church there, was an officer, I mean, just get, and people in the community have watched it. They watched it happen. I've got friends that I had, my friends, and that they didn't even want to acknowledge they knew me at social events and things because they just, it's tough on them. Socially, Nashville's a special kind of, or different kind of place, I guess, old southern town,
Yeah.
and the social climbing and people wanting to get into clubs or whatever they're in. So all these schools growing, but they're victims. I mean, I remember when Alexander Willis wrote a story on the last one I think he wrote before he may have left the Freeman Webb publication that they own, when he wrote and put that there were about 12 people, I think, out of Grace getting ready to come forward. And then the paper took that story, took the whole article down. When you've got that kind of stuff going on, that start, and you see like somebody speaking out on the internet, and then they get taken to the court and almost get thrown in jail, which I think happened out there in the GCA case. That chills people from speaking out. People are not stupid. They look and they go, I don't think I'll keep my mouth shut. Chase Smith, who writes for the Epoch Times, he wrote a story about the Covenant School. All the Covenant School, it was all glowing. It's a sweet school. There's never been a problem. No red flags. Everything's great. Chase for the Epoch Times wrote a story which probably got read by nobody because nobody else in the media amplified it, where he talked about some of the issues at the school back in that time. And the whole issue is coming around to, did something happen to Audrey Hale back when she was in K through, well, Brink Fiddler said she went there through third grade, K through third. Dr. Bill Campbell, who's head of the school, said she went there from K through fourth grade. That's two different stories. Nobody seems to really know when she went to school there. At least nobody's been able to figure that out and report on that yet. But whatever time it was, did something happen to her?
I would think so. Do you still think if the New York Times provided the Covenant School parents were provided child sex abuse cover-up information they had prior to the Covenant School shooting, they could have prevented it?
I didn't hear the very beginning of that.
The New York
I
Times,
think
you
it.
said, had information that
Yeah.
had they provided it to the parents earlier than March 27, 2023, it might have prevented what happened.
Oh, I think if this had come out, the New York Times definitely is not about it. If it had come out by anybody, WSM TV, which sent me I got a letter basically telling me I was stalking people at the station, and it was part of the whole effort to criminalize me. But that was WSM TV. And they sent me effectively a cease and desist letter saying I couldn't send anything over there and involve Demetra Kalodimos and people like that. If anybody had reported on what was really going on at Covenant, it would have been out in the community. And I'm not sure the Covenant School would survive back then, because I think that everybody would have been horrified by what went on there. And the school was young and struggling coming up anyway. And so I think it would have probably not made it. And as I'm saying today, it should be closed. But
and like you were saying, some Covenant School parents were provided child sex abuse cover-up info before March 27th, but it's unknown if all the Covenant School parents were informed about, arrest
there's
in 2015.
Some Covenant School parents that are knowledgeable about what has gone down, and they were knowledgeable before the shooting, and some of them are participants in the cover-up. Now, what I don't know is what has the rest of them been told? I'm watching, and I've reached out to Elaine Eisinger at the Capitol, who is with Bo Mitchell, Representative Bo Mitchell. They've been doing all the stuff that they've been doing, and I've contacted and got copy turks. I've sent emails, you know, into the General Assembly for a long time, but that's been a couple months, I think, and I've written it to Justin Jones and to Busso and all kinds of people. None of them on either side have responded. So you have all this stuff going at the Capitol where everybody's going to have the laws get legislated or whatever they're done, but no one's responding or interested in the child sex abuse cover-up that's going on today still at the Covenant community.
So
shocking?
Yeah. So nobody, Metro Sheriff TBI, nobody, Andy Ogles, National Congressman, nobody has talked to you about any of this?
No.
Okay.
And I watch people go down and give statements. I think it would have been wise to bring Angie Solomon down there and let her give a statement, because they were talking about autopsies and making sure that – and I understand. I mean, I said at the beginning, these families, especially the victims' families, and it's horrific. And I know some things I think that probably other people don't know, because I get tips, and I don't know whether they're true or not, but I do get some tips, and some of them end up being true. And so I have great empathy for the families. And again, this is extremely difficult to talk about, because none of us would want to be in any kind of position like this. But had we had some grown-ups and adults doing the right thing, I don't think we would have some people no longer with us, because I think there would have been different – it would have taken a different course. And I think the New York Times didn't do its job. I think the governor and the Tennessee General Assembly, Tennessee Supreme Court, Attorney General, Metro Council, Nashville Mayor, all the way down. I mean, I pounded them and gave them. I guess it was Jonah or whatever. I think it was the Nineveh, but I went and tried to tell them, and nobody wanted to hear. And all they wanted to do was retaliate and arrest you and destroy you and put you in jail, which they did.
So Austin, I first heard of your case doing my homework when I interviewed Lauren Conlon about her corruption show right before it went to its second season, all about Grant Solomon and Angie Solomon and Aaron Solomon. It was a few days after you filed a motion to intervene, which you mentioned, in the Covenant Manifesto open records case on February 12th, just a month ago, month and a half ago. Judge Miles denied the February 12th motion to intervene, but used her authority to convert the motion to an amicus brief. Judge Miles issued a new order instructing all parties, interveners like you, filers, to submit any new filing, declarations, etc., via in-camera review, or the filers will be subject to contempt of court. Can you explain all that? It was February, so how's it actually proceeding?
Well, there have been other briefs that have been filed, a lot of them. And there were once mine was filed, there were motions that were filed in response to her converting that to amicus. Now, the reason I wanted equal standing with the Covenant parents, because I wanted to be able to come in, and I was coming in. I don't have an attorney because there won't be one go near me. But I came in on my own. I fortunately learned a little bit about writing motions over time, and you're not supposed to represent yourself or you're a fool, but I'm a fool. and I went down there and filed it. And the reason I did is I wanted to go into court and have the ability that nobody was going to ask any calling witnesses. I wanted to call witnesses, those witnesses that you were talking about a minute ago. I wanted to call them and get them on the stand, and anybody else I wanted to call, because this is the place to do it. If we're trying to find out what happened, if we want to know what's going on, if we want to take precautions to protect people and do things, we need to have open courts, open hearings. We need to get the truth out. We need to have witnesses called, and you get put on the stand. Somebody needs to ask them questions. That's a strong America. Now we don't have all that. And that's what I was trying to do. When she converted it to an amicus, it didn't allow me to be an intervener. And the appellate court had ruled that these other people could intervene, but I wasn't allowed that. But I did get the amicus status.
Oh, that's good.
I'm a friend of the court.
Yeah, that's good.
But
that's
lose that ability to like be like the other lawyers. They're all sitting around the table.
Okay.
And
so I only have a few more.
I'm glad she did that.
Okay, I only have a few more minutes with you, so I'm going to try to jam through these last ones because I think they're kind of important. That's okay. It's a problem with the timing. So Nashville Metro Government, Covenant Church, Covenant School all opposed your motion. The Covenant School said the child sex abuse cover-up was an alleged, unfounded, dismissed conspiracy theory. But the fact is D.A. Funk wrongfully prosecuted you to protect the Covenant police cover-up without disclosing that his sister-in-law was a Covenant staff member since 2001, when Audrey Hale and your daughter were both at the school their very first year. He told us that. Funk has been in trouble by News Channel 5 for campaign contributions, and they sued him for his unjustified and willful failure to comply with the Tennessee Public Records Act. 12 months since the shooting, and your family is still banned from Covenant and other places in town. 12 months since the shooting, months since you filed the motion to intervene, and no Covenant mom or father or member of the Covenant community has contacted you to ask what you know about the child sex abuse cover-up and Audrey Hale, even though the world knows about it. You shared with me the mom of Grant Solomon immediately reached out to you in July 2021 because you possessed information connecting GCA to Covenant. Can you just maybe let us understand why they're keeping you on the outskirts when it sounds to me like all you're trying to do is sound the alarm that school has got a big, big problem for their kids? As well as the Gray School and other schools in town, where we've now dealt with a youth pastor who's been in trouble for sex trafficking, and another one at the Catholic Church here in Franklin. I mean, this is a epidemic, it seems, and you're the only person I hear screaming as loud as you can to be heard, but not being heard, even by the Covenant School themselves. You're trying to be a friend of the court for them.
Oh, yeah, that's the million-dollar question as to why none of them have wanted to meet or sit down and talk, other than that I'm banned. And they're inside of that community, and they're in there, and I'm a leper. And so and that's the way it's been for a long time. I think that's hard to break through. But there is a triangle. That's actually bigger than that, but it runs from, you know, you've got Covenant, you got Christ Pres Academy, and you got GCA, and there's some real deep, numerous connections between those places, and there's some issues in there. It doesn't mean all the people are bad. It doesn't mean all the people understand what's going on. It does, but what it does mean is they don't really know what all's going on. And
all right, let me ask you this one. Let me ask you, if for the sake of time, let me ask you this one. So BaptistNews.com has a very long history piece on the Covenant School. You're in it. March 29th, 2023 by Mark Wingsfield. So obviously because of the tragedy, he did some homework and wanted to tell everybody, but here's what he found. Covenant Church and its denomination represent the more conservative side of Presbyterian life in America today. The PCA was formed in the 70s as a breakaway group from the better known Presbyterian Church USA, mainly over the ordination of women, which the PCA opposes. Complementarianism. This theology teaches that God created males and females for distinct roles in church and home, including allowing only men to be pastors. What is known as that, Pastor Bachman and other church leaders were accused of mishandling the knowledge of this alleged child molester, who, because of his position, reportedly had free rein at the church and the school. Davis, his reputation was ruined after he attempted to attend church, as he had done for 18 years. Oklahoma Baptist pastor Wade Burleson wrote, he was accosted by men with guns, separated from his wife and children, and threatened to be thrown in jail if he ever set foot on the property again, even though the Nashville police were never called to the church property. The actions were taken by a private security team. The entire experience was humiliating. Anybody reading that is going to have to assume the church was trying to shut you up and cover something up. Is that?
Well, I'll tell you something else that's more disturbing about that is that private security team. When the police ended up giving me some reports, and I had two names in there, but a deacon told me there were about 10 people in the building. They were up there actually watching those videos. There's a room up there where everything's recorded, as you know, in the hallways. That's how they've got film of Audrey walking around in there. There's a place.
Sure.
And so it records, I guess, people when they're moving around the building. And so, but I was told there were 10 at least, maybe more. And so I've since been told things. And I'm in the court when Scott talks with one of the witnesses testified against me, he referred to him as plainclothesman. And that's usually a term for police officers. So I think the more shocking thing is I said that they weren't called to the scene. I think they were already up there embedded in the unit, and that they didn't want to have it be where some police officers were actually out there blocking American citizens walking into public Sunday church service. See, they're so far over the line and have gotten way, way out of control over here in this church. And that's what's so fundamentally wrong there. And I think Almighty God is not very happy about what's been done at his house. You know, he said, rendering to Caesar what is Caesar and rendering God's what God's. And that's up at God's house. And so I think everybody's been worried about me, but really Almighty God's doing everybody needs to worry about, because they came on his land, came into his house, brought their guns and things into his place. And I don't think he's very pleased about it. And so everybody thinks that they can just get out and decree stuff, you know, and do whatever they want to do. There's an Almighty God that might hold people accountable for what they've done.
All right. One last little nugget here. And millstones certainly sound like they're appropriate. I've read two of his books, one on Johnny Cash and a wonderful one on Steve McQueen, who I'm named after. Most boys born in the 70s were, right, producer Steve? Pastor
yeah.
Greg Laurie is a famous pastor and worked at Covenant in his humble beginnings. He also got mistreated there. What can you tell us about those days for Greg, the 2002 timeframe, the early days? Was it a great place?
Wait, but are you talking about Greg Lurie or Greg Laurie?
Laurie.
Well, Greg Laurie's not worked there. He's not. Greg Lurie is a father that was, the father of the children put in the safe house that I was asking questions about. Greg Laurie's I think he's the pastor that was involved with Billy Graham and people like that. But
I thought it was the same guy. Not the same guy?
Not the same guy. One's Laurie and the other one's Lurie.
Oh, not the first time I've messed that up. Sorry, everybody. But okay. But my point was, back in the 2002 timeframe, was Covenant Church a wonderful place to be, or has it always been questionable like this?
I think it was. I think every church has problems and challenges that pop along as you go on. And then I know in our early days that we loved it. And it was it was where my wife and I met on the back row and we got married, and the pastor that ended up wearing a bulletproof vest getting me is the one that married me and baptized my children. And I was a deacon with him. I used to go to ball games with him at the Vanity games. We were considering him one of my friends, but you know, Judas betrayed Jesus, and there's a lot, life's complicated and churches aren't perfect, and everybody looks at them and thinks they're perfect or not. There were a lot of messed up people go, and that's why you need to have the Holy Spirit and have people submitted to that and trying to do the right things on major level, because if you don't, you can end up like what's Covenant's in, which is a gigantic mess. And it's tragic. It's sad.
I want everybody to know that Austin Davis lost his job because of the controversy. Had no money anymore to his name. He's going before bankruptcy court, or maybe already has. needed $3,000 to protect the house that you didn't have. Austin is low key about money, only talking about it with close friends and family. I get that from public information. Somehow, in some way, God intervened. Do you have a GoFundMe or anything my listeners can chip into if they are so inclined to help you?
I don't. I've been kind of trusted God, and it's a miracle. I mean, that in itself is a story to watch how God has provided for me. I feel like Elijah in the when he was with the widow and and the flower. But I think it was Elijah. I'm not the greatest biblical scholar in the world, but anyway, I don't. And I just hadn't. I hadn't done it. I've had people try to do that. Even Wade, when he wrote that article, he called me that morning. And I said, I wish he hadn't put that in there. But anyway, it's just not something I highlight.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for taking the time. You're very brave to come on here. Please tell our listeners again, you mentioned it, but let them know where your Twitter handle is, any other social media, any way they can follow you and keep up with your stories. I know, of course, the silentbell.org we'll put in the show notes, but please tell everyone how they can find you.
www.thesilentbell.org and then at BuzzFeed Source. That's all one word, BuzzFeed Source.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on again. We are out of time here, but I really appreciate it. And God bless you. And please come on again sometime.
All right. Thank you, Steve. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Right, welcome to the first HeartlandJournal.com Steve and Steve segment of our show. Producer Steve, what'd you think of our guest, Austin Davis?
You know, Steve, we were talking before the show about the parallax view. And for anybody who hasn't seen it, it's a 70s movie about conspiracies. And Steve, you and I talked about the situation with the son, mysterious death, the car rolled back, all that. I remember that months ago. And I'm telling you what, Steve, there is so much just listening and having been on my side from the various interviews that you've done. This goes all the way at the top, and there is deep, deep corruption. And we know that when it comes to child abuse, child trafficking, it is Satan loves it, and those who follow him love it. And those of us who don't, we hate it. We want it exposed. We want it to be revealed. Why would anybody cover up? So you find five people that are guilty, remove them, put them in jail, protect the children, get some help. That's the sane thing to do. But what we have seen in this case and in numerous cases,
I'm pretty sure that's what Paul's letter to the Corinthians was all about, but yeah.
I mean, we've seen this throughout church history, at least in the several decades that I've been around, of one church after another, someone in the position of power saying, "You won't touch anybody, you're going to cover it up." I've talked with people who knew about their elders having affairs with all different women, and they got it covered up, and pastors having affairs with all, Bill Hybels, these people, top dog people that are involved. And then he talks about this. So, Steve, thanks for bringing him on. And I know he was a fire hose because you know what? When you don't get a chance to talk, he's got all these things to share. He's got nearly 10 years of information there, and you have 35 minutes with the guy, or 45 minutes. Folks,
Yeah,
what a
Joe
man.
Rogan can do the 3-hour thing. I do what I can. But if I'm going to run into the news, we got to get going. So, preliminary reports show that the number of births in the state of Tennessee has increased nearly one-fourth since the abortion ban went into effect. Following the overturn of Roe v. Wade, Tennessee instituted one of the strictest abortion bans in the country. Abortions are only allowed in the cases of rare medical emergencies. Since that ban in August 2022, researchers from the IZA Institute of Labor Economics estimate that the number of live births in Tennessee has increased by 24.6%. This reflects an increase of 2,573 births each year. God bless them. Thank you, TennesseeConservativeNews.com and friends of the show, Brandon Lewis, for reporting that. You can read all their stuff at TennesseeConservativeNews.com and at TNCON, well, TNCONews1 on Twitter.
Ah.
That's hard. All right, next story. Ivermectin could be a powerful drug for fighting cancer. Here's why. Different from many conventional cancer therapies, ivermectin kills cancer cells by enhancing immune response. What? You mean the drug they spent $1 trillion of marketing to try to destroy and called it horse paste? Yep, that one. To the oncologist, Mr. Alderson was a dead man walking. Mr. Alderson's wife, Eve Alderson, said Mr. Alderson got started with 10 rounds of radiation therapy. Initially, his carcinoembryonic antigen, CEA, a marker for tumor activity, was significantly elevated at 480 nanograms per millimeter. A month later, he started chemotherapy. By then, his CEA level had risen to 1,498 ngs per ml. By the time he started treatment, his colon cancer had metastasized and spread to his liver, where he had 25 tumors. I was off their charts, Mr. Alderson said in an interview with the Cancer Box, a cancer diagnostic blog. Due to concerns about COVID-19 and the ongoing pandemic, he started looking into preventative medication and found ivermectin. Further research showed that the drug could likely enhance the effectiveness of his chemotherapy and radiation therapy and was relatively safe. In February 21, he began taking ivermectin. 10 days later, his CEA levels had dropped to 184 ngs per ml. Remember, 1,498, 10 days later, 184, 90%. Come March, the number was 47.9. By April 7th, it was 20.7. By April 21st, it had dropped to 13.9. By midsummer, it had fallen into the normal range. Of the 25 tumors in his liver, only three remained. Mrs. Alderson attributes Mr. Alderson's survival beyond his prognosis to his success with ivermectin and the chemotherapy drug fluorouracil. Ivermectin was instrumental, she said. Good thing they didn't listen to Dr. CNN or Dr. Fauci, huh? Now, given that, why am I seeing this? Coordinated effort of educators and healthcare providers urges veto of school vaccination exemption bill. By Brad McElhaney, WVMetroNews.com, as in West Virginia. A coalition of educators and healthcare organizations has been coordinating to encourage Governor Jim Justice to veto a bill that would loosen some vaccination standards in West Virginia schools. Quote, we are committed to provide the governor what we consider the best evidence for the health and well-being of our citizens. They just gave you the best evidence. What the hell are they talking about? As such, the data related to the maintaining current requirements for immunizing school children ages in West Virginia are clear, and West Virginia is regarded best in class, said Clay Marsh, executive dean for health sciences at West Virginia University. Requiring immunizations with only medical exemptions protect our children and our communities against illnesses like measles, rubella, hepatitis, chickenpox, mumps, polio, and mumps. Said that twice. Although border states have had measles outbreaks recently, we have not because of our immunization requirements. Oh, shit. We have shared this with Governor Justice and have other groups that focus on the health care and health of our state. House Bill 5105, put that around 5150, and that's going crazy, removes vaccination requirements for students in virtual public schools. What? It also would allow private and parochial schools to set their own standards. Thank you. Lawmakers considered a provision that would have allowed parents to send in a letter citing a religious exemption to vaccinate requirements, but that was not in the bill that passed on the final day of the regular legislative session. Next story. U.S. Navy overspent $400 million in aid to Ukraine. They manually changed records to fix the appearance of misappropriated funds, according to new IG report. On that note, one of the two dumbest people in D.C. has spoken. In case you were thinking of retiring someday, bad news from Janet Yellen. Social Security and Medicare are now underfunded by $175 trillion.
Oh, yes.
That comes to roughly $1.4 million per American household. Hope you have that laying around. There are only three solutions: slash beneficiaries, massively hike taxes, or cut everybody's benefits to poverty levels. Biden claims he literally, quote unquote, cut the national debt by 7 billion, 1.4 trillion, 1.7 billion, 1.7 trillion, and in half, depending on the day. Clip number one.
The national debt by $1,700,000,000.
We literally cut the federal debt in half by $1.4 trillion.
$1,700,000,000. $1,700,000,000 cut.
We cut the debt by $1.7 billion in the last 2 years.
Let me say that again. $1.7 trillion.
Reduced the budget by $1.7 billion. The debt.
We cut the federal debt in half. Fact.
In the first 2 years of my administration, I cut the debt by $1.7 trillion.
$1.7 billion.
$1.7 trillion. $1.7 trillion.
$1.7 trillion.
$7 billion.
$1.7 trillion.
$1.7 billion.
This is what happens when a compulsive, lifelong liar experiences cognitive decline. Biden did not reduce the debt by 1.7 billion. He actually increased it by 3.84 trillion. And the biggest news of the day, and by biggest, I mean enormous and unsustainable, you can find this one on heartlandjournal.com. Producer Steve, guess how much debt California has outstanding?
Oh, gosh. Are we talking $1 trillion?
California deficit is $220 billion and the state is $1.6 trillion in debt. But what's $400 billion between friends? Governor Gavin Newsom bragged of a surplus, but California is seriously underwater.
Whoa.
While finalizing the upcoming fiscal year's state budget back in May 2022, California Governor Gavin Hairdo Newsom boasted of an extraordinary protected surplus, projected surplus, $97 billion. Extraordinary projected surplus, $97 billion. The governor immediately collaborated with an enthusiastic state legislature to spend it all. Of course, new spending on new programs and benefits tends to become permanent. This has happened repeatedly in California between fiscal year 2012 and 13. I still live there, I think. And fiscal year 2022-23, the year with the projected $97 billion surplus, per capita general fund spending doubled from just over $3,000 per resident to just under $6,000. All figures are in 2022 inflation-adjusted dollars. Some watchdogs, however, have succeeded in cracking the code. John Morlock, one of the only certified public accountants to serve in the California State Senate, just published a review of the state's fiscal health, focusing on the balance sheet. According to Morlock, not Moloch, California's balance sheet is in trouble. Morlock declared in a March California Insider interview that the state now has the largest unrestricted net deficit in the U.S., $222 billion. In plain English, Morlock is saying that California's state government accounts have liabilities that exceed assets by $222 billion. No matter how creative Newsom and his financial wizards may be, someday that money will have to be paid, probably by every other state except California. A remedy that California has turned to over the years and will undoubtedly turn to now is to accumulate additional long-term debt. Oh, nice, at 8%, emulating the federal government, but lacking its dollar printing ability. Wouldn't they love that? California Gold Rush. California state and local governments and agencies have racked up over $1 trillion in debt, primarily in bonds and unfunded pension liabilities. These liabilities, too, must be paid, since that's all but impossible. The liabilities must be serviced with payments that, just as at the federal level, will eat up more and more of the operating budget. Throw in free health care for illegals, and you got some free housing and this and that, and you're in big trouble. California's total state and local government debt now stands at almost $1.6 trillion, or about half the state's GDP. That isn't an alarming ratio when compared to the national debt, which has now soared to 128% of U.S. GDP with no end in sight. Most countries at about 100% of GDP lose their currency status, so we're in trouble there. But Californians carry this $1.6 trillion state and local debt for $40,000 per capita, in addition to their share of the national debt, about $90,000 per capita. So you live in California, you owe $130,000 just for being alive. The At article was from February of 2022. I suspect the liabilities are now close to $2 trillion. Wonder where all the money went? One school district awards $1,400 each high schooler to learn how to become social justice warriors and participate in leftist activism, according to documents obtained by the Free Press. These paid activists, Steve, are tomorrow's Harvard Law School graduates and judges, folks. Yes. God help us. Stay tuned for my thoughts for the day. Time for my quotes for the day. Before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to heartlandjournal.com. You go to Rumble, Spotify, Google it on the internet. Just go direct to the .com and hit the subscribe button. All we need is your email address and your zip code, and we'll deliver news right into your inbox every day, free to you. Still, it's worth noting that by the age of 20, this whistleblower had resisted two of the most powerful institutions, church and army, both. He is an atheist, and I have been against all of these wars ever since. Robert Altman. Robert Bernard Altman died 2006, was a film director, screenwriter, and producer. He was a five-time nominee of the Academy Award for Best Director and is considered an enduring figure from the new Hollywood era. You have to start with the truth. The truth is the only way that we can get anywhere, because any decision-making that is based upon lies or ignorance can't lead to a good conclusion. Julian Assange, still in the UK jail, last I checked. Carrying on a war in someone else's country, a country in no way implicated in attacking our own or anyone else's, to continue to do that against the intense wishes of most of the inhabitants of that country began to seem to me morally wrong. Daniel Ellsberg, Secrets, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, died last year. Rest in peace. The New York Times published the first installment of the Pentagon Papers, A Top Secret History of the Vietnam War, on June 13th, 1971. I was 3 months old. That's it for this episode. Thank you, Austin Davis, for telling your truth all the way to the end of the line for obviously reasons greater than your own self-interest. Looking out for those kids when no one else will, and at great cost. This is goodbye for now. I am your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of heartlandjournal.com. See you all tomorrow. Peace in our time, and definitely glory to God. Let's go out with a song by 3 Days Grace. I'll let you figure out what it's about. Chain of Abuse. And stay tuned for my On Fault Lines again with Todd and Angie. They love me. Lots of good stuff about Race to 270.
Any friends at all? People
told me that he sounded like a dying pig. Did you think I'd
get the part?
You definitely do need makeup.
On the bass. There we go.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.
Very cool. Steve Abramowitz, who's joining us. Steve, I don't have your bio up. I just have that you're the CEO of Heartland Journal. That's all I got for you. Is that all I can say, Steve?
Well, it used to be the Mill Creek View podcast,
yeah,
but now it's the Heartland Journal Tennessee podcast, and I'm the editor-in-chief of the heartlandjournal.com website that launches today. So I'm proud to announce it on your show.
Excellent. Well, thank you. We're going to put that into the bio. We're going to make sure that we get that in there before we wrap this segment. But I want to ask you, what is going on with RFK Jr.? It seems like both sides and both parties are threatened by him jumping in the race, and rightly so. I mean, in some states, he's polling as low as 9%, but in other states, he's pulling in close to 20-something percent. And now that he's brought on his VP pick, Nicole Shanahan, who is from the big tech world, I didn't think she was a problem. I thought it was a weird pick when I first heard that name. But then I realized, oh my goodness, she comes with not only tech money and a lot of big money from tech that pulls from Democrat donors, but also the technology behind tech and elections. It's still kind of blurry, but we're starting to understand what that looks like. A lot of the times, and we saw that Google is interfering in the last 16 elections, you know what? Big tech does affect elections, and she may come with that. And I think that is, whether or not it's true or it's just a rumor, just the idea that she's a figurehead from that world could mean that RFK Jr. might actually have, I don't think he's got a chance, but he certainly could pull a lot of money and a lot of influence in the 2024 election. So let me ask you, RFK Jr., who does he hurt more, Biden or Trump?
Well, in picking, as you said, Nicole Shanahan, I think he showed his cards. There were mm-hmm. questions a few weeks ago, but now we know he's going to take votes from Biden, not Trump. She's very liberal. She's Soros-backed, Democrat money raiser. Actually got him $7 million for his ad campaign during the Super Bowl, if you remember that. That was her.
She paid for it. Yep.
Right. So that newfound cash and ballot access could be disastrous in November for Biden.
Well, that's a lot of money for Biden. But remember, Biden just had a $25 million fundraiser, whereas Trump is about to have his multi-million dollar fundraiser in Palm Beach, I think, on the 6th of this month. Money wins races. Okay, that's number one. But how about the big tech angle? Does big tech help win presidential elections? This is something that I don't think we've ever really gotten any metrics for. I mean, we have like, you know, little figures here and there, but no real study on how much Facebook ads and Google searches and all that stuff, how much that affects the mindset. And we're talking about just visible stuff that you and I can see, but what about all the soft power things, all the suggestives, all the, like inserting the idea of fear or hope or any of those emotions that we're starting to understand how Google Analytics work? That stuff matters. And maybe Nicole comes with that, and maybe RFK Jr. comes with that.
Well, coming from the land of Microsoft, as I do, I know full well that part of the mail-in balloting, the CISA, the ERIC system, all of these technologically advanced ways to vote when all you really need is a paper ballot like they do in high schools every year for student council. I do know that there is that. But more importantly, I just want to focus on ballot access, because okay, RFK can't do anything if he's not on the ballot, right? They tried to take Trump off the ballot in Colorado. It didn't work. That's now what they have to do to keep him off, because otherwise you're going to get yourself into that Ralph Nader situation. So the Democratic National Committee, Kennedy as a joke publicly, but they are trying to plan more attacks behind the scenes, because they remember Ralph Nader got almost 3 million votes, 2.75% of the popular vote. Thank Al Gore. Bush only won 543 votes in Florida, right? And so the Harris Forbes poll has RFK at 12%, as does Fox Beacon, and Quinnipiac has 13%, and our friends at Harvard have 14% today with Trump, Trump plus 5. So bottom line is, get him on the ballot and he becomes a spoiler, you know? And it was the Catholics that won it for Reagan when they called what they used to call Reagan Democrats. And his uncle, JFK, had to overcome, you know, this whole Vatican-controlled anti-Catholic hate in America way back then, and an RFK versus a Biden Catholic in New England are very different voters. And so if Google wants to change an algorithm or shadow ban a candidate or keep them off Twitter or do whatever they end up doing because of what you're talking about, those 16 election quote unquote interferences when they had FBI people on the payroll, well, Nicole, the vice president pick, is a believer. And I haven't heard much from Kamala Harris on Jesus. We just had Easter here, and they did their Trans Day of Observation or whatever it's called. And it was the evangelicals that tipped the scale to Trump versus Bernie. And you know what? Those folks are less into the internet. Now, the employees with the millions and billions of dollars of savings, they very well could back candidates that are believers. We don't know. We'll see. But my theory here is that RFK plays a very, very difficult role for the Democrats who have become uber secular amongst those folks who are still in the Democratic Party that are faithful. That is going to take votes from Biden, and that could very well keep him from the magic 270, which is what this is really all about.
Well, let's talk about that 270 number. I mean, the VP pick usually is, well, it covers what the presidential candidate lacks, right? It covers all the qualities that they lack or they can't get themselves naturally while campaigning. That's why, you know, sorry, I'll just say it. This might be my assumption, but Kamala Harris, right? It taps into all those things that white man Joe Biden can't get into. So RFK Jr., well, largely this entire campaign, he's been kept off air. No one's giving him that much airtime. Maybe Fox News throws him on once or twice a week, you know, but largely, I don't even know what his messaging is other than he's anti-vax. That's the only thing that I know about him. There's nothing else coming out from that guy and or anything that any ideas that he may have or any ideologies or policies. When he picked Shanahan, I thought, well, why would you choose someone from the same state as you? Is that even allowed? But then this makes total sense, given what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not allowed because he doesn't think he's going to win. And it's only allowed if they win, right? That's why Dick Cheney had to move from Texas to Wyoming for 5 days so he could say that he is a Wyoming resident, which his daughter went on to kind of control. But here's the Biden team strategy from my observation. And that's all I am as an observer. And I've observed a lot of them. I can go back to the Ford, you know, Reagan first 76 campaign. That's how old I am. But anyway, they want to expose the facts that both Kennedy and Shanahan have peddled conspiracy theories for years, but they very well could be facts. And he's got the ability to say it because he's a spoiler, right? Just like Nader. He's not going to win, but he can say whatever he wants, just like Perot did, just like even Bernie Sanders. So Dems want to expose the fact that their run is helping former President Trump, but it's not. And I like him because he said, like, elections will be won on podcasts like mine and yours this year. But his policies are, you know, far too left for me to actually vote for him. I did enjoy his book about Fauci and the good doctor's gain of function funding. It's called The Real Anthony Fauci. And just yesterday he was on Twitter telling truths others can't, like data is being manipulated. The BLS household survey shows 5 million fewer employed workers than the payroll survey. Philly Fed just admitted payrolls overstated by 800,000, stuff like that, that a spoiler can do, you know, even talking about forever chemicals found in food packaging today. That's what Ralph Nader was. He was a consumer advocate. So I just think they're saying publicly, we don't care about those two. They're a joke. They're conspiracy theorists. But in reality, they're freaking out because the DNC, the Never RFK team, they include lawyers like Dana Remus and Liz Smith to keep track of the states where Kennedy's on the ballot full time. You don't do that if you don't care, right? So RFK's campaign says he'll appear in New Hampshire, Hawaii, and Utah. Yeah, mostly two of the three of those are pretty Democratic states. And in February, they launched billboards, paid money for billboard campaigns against him in must-win Michigan. That's 15 electoral votes. So I'm really convinced that what could happen is now, if I may, I think they want it to happen. Here's why. RFK Jr. pulls off enough to avoid 270 for Biden. The election goes to the House. That's the rules to select the president and the speaker, Hakeem Jeffries from Brooklyn, obviously is going to want Biden over Trump. That's what they're trying to do, is disenfranchise everybody from the actual 270 vote. They tried to get rid of the Electoral College. Didn't work. We still have it this year, but here's plan B. I know it's crazy, but I've been watching it, and there's only one vote majority for the Republicans, and then they hand over the gavel to all the committee chairmen, to the Democrats, and everything stops about Hunter Biden and China and business deals and et cetera, diamonds from Moscow.
Steve, let's talk about the Nicole Stranahan as a choice. I was trying to think as a sort of parlor game, if he could have chosen a worse possible running mate. I was having a hard time, among the human race, to figure out a worse person that he could have chosen. And I kind of came up short. There might be certain dogs or cats that might have been not as good.
That would be bad, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. And not all of them. Some of them might be a better choice. Basically, look, he balanced out his reputation as a wacky conspiracist with someone who is such a wacky conspiratist that she doesn't believe in IVF. She doesn't think that in vitro fertilization is actual science. It's actually incredibly simple science. She's also another she's another Californian. She's another super rich person. She's kind of, someone like him who has inherited all of her, or in her case, divorced very well. So she has, she doesn't have anything to really point to in terms of accomplishments. And I was literally thinking, he would have been better off picking his own wife, Cheryl Hines. What he needed is someone who's well-known, likable, with some kind of heft. It could have been, a good actor, let's say. It could have been anybody.
You're going through the exact same thought process I was going through when I first heard the name. And then as soon as I started digging a little deeper, it didn't take long. I figured it out real darn quick. And it has to do with what I said earlier. She is a believer, so you get that. She's a woman, so you get that. She is a Democrat, so you get that. And of course, he could have picked his wife, but this is the same thing. They've known each other forever. And like I said, she raised $7 million for his Super Bowl ad when he had no money. So she knows where the money is, and he kind of owed her, but they're also not playing to win. You're doing what I always try to do and say, now what's the strategy behind winning there that could actually work?
So you're saying that basically he's Theodore Roosevelt in 1912 as a bull moose candidate. Teddy was so angry at his successor, his former protege, William Howard Taft, who this is the second time that Taft comes up in the 2-hour show. But he was so angry at Taft that even though he knew he was going to lose, he's like, I'm going to split the left of center vote between me and the Republican vote between me and Taft, and then give
you
it
can
to
go
Wilson.
Back further, there's Aaron Burr, or you can go more recent with Green Party Jill Stein in 2016, who took votes away from Hillary Clinton, contributing to the Democratic nominee's loss, basically. The more state ballots he qualifies for, the more he become a real force and a real factor in the general election, just to peel off those 270s. And so if they said, oh gosh, we want Biden to win by the 271, they'd have a different strategy than if they say, well, wait a minute, if we elevate him and actually nobody gets to 270, our friends in the House get to decide. And oh my gosh, we're back to the Tilden days.
Well,
you ever know
if that's true, what's the point then? Steve, like in other words, okay, so Jill Stein, I think I know why Jill Stein is running. Jill Stein's trying to push the overall 50-yard line of American politics over to the left to try to influence the overall process. She's not really trying to hand the election to either Biden or Trump. She has her own agenda. What's RFK's agenda? You don't run for president simply in order to deny one person, unless you're Theodore Roosevelt, who was a spiteful SOB. Why do you do this?
It very well could be some Biden-Kennedy bad blood. The Kennedy family has come out very negatively against their nephew, RFK.
Yeah, that's a bad
look. There's some Shakespearean stuff that could be going on. I don't want to say that, but you mentioned Jill Stein wants to move it to the left. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. moves it further to the left. Just look at his past policies. I mean, the guy's all about surveillance and, you know, some pretty crazy things, but he is also allowed to say some pretty honest things because he's a spoiler. He knows he's not going to win 51% of the popular vote or 271 of the electoral votes because he won't even be on all 50 states' ballots. So, again, there's this weird thing going on in America ever since Ross Perot came around, where we always get very excited for the underdog and the third party candidate. Unlike Bernie Sanders, who tried to take over the Democratic Party, RFK is actually running as an independent. He started out as a Democrat, but you know, they wouldn't give him Secret Service protection, which is outrageous, by the way.
Yeah,
it is. It's absolutely disgusting. I mean, imagine if something happens to him. Everybody's about like the most foreseeable assassination in American history. I mean, like everyone could see this coming a million miles away. Why would the White House take the chance to let anything happen to him?
Well, it is the era also that we're in that's new, where they disclose who actually was behind his uncle's killing, right? So the fact that, and why, the fact that he wanted to spread the intelligence community to the wind, followed by Reagan, who tried as well. I mean, it's a scary time. And the fact that they're not doing that says more than if they said, okay, fine, have Secret Service protection. So I don't want to get too crazy because obviously there's a lot there. But if something bad happens, yeah, the history books are not going to be kind to the person who made the decision not to grant it, assuming that they would have even done their job if they were there.
So, Steve, walk us through this 270, okay? So he's here to, at the moment, RFK Jr. is putting a speed bump into Biden's 270 number. What can Biden offer him, or will he get an offer, or what's going to happen there? What I'm trying to understand what the play is here.
Well,
because
he would have
both
to get
men
some.
Understand. Say that again?
RFK Jr., for RFK, I mean, I want some clarity, Steve. Are you saying that there's a possibility that RFK could carry a state?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's
Which
winning
one?
In some of the...
California at the moment, right? Maybe.
Yeah. I don't think that would ever happen. Polls are obviously a century away, even though it's 9 months. But Michigan, I think, is the one, mostly because of the fact that he's got a lot of... I did mention the pharmaceutical thing. Most hated man in America is still Anthony Fauci, and that is how RFK was able to propel himself onto the national stage by saying the NIH gives too much money to universities, and this is what they did with it, and he should be in jail, and he wrote a book on it, made money on it. I don't want to think he's doing it for the money or to elevate his profile, but if Biden were to come around and say, hey, do you want to be the new director of NIH, or if do you want $1 billion for your children's health charity, maybe he would walk away. But if we're just going to bank it on what are they spending money on and trying to achieve, I'd say, you know, same thing was said about Ralph Nader, who to this day won't admit that he's the reason Gore lost. But there must have been a reason, and it probably had to do with they interfered with each other's business. I don't mean corrupt businesses. I mean, Ralph Nader was a consumer advocate who got seatbelts as a law passed, which saved a lot of lives, and he wanted to go on and do other things. Maybe Gore from Tennessee had other corporate interests involved, and they did some hating of each other, so to speak, just like we know that Cheney hates Trump or Cheney hates Reagan, believe it or not. So we have a problem in backroom stuff going on here, or else RFK would just walk away and say, let's let him go mano a mano. Trump versus Biden part two. I don't have any vested interest to do anything about it. The guy just picked a VP candidate because he wouldn't have qualified for certain states had he not on the day he did it. So he's obviously willing to go to November, which would be a convention, which could be contested, although I'd be surprised. Democrats don't play that way. And then you've got a whole nother throwing a cat amongst the pigeons to say, wow, could he actually pull this off? No, because the people who would have voted for him had he been taking Trump voters away are going to go with Trump because he is there. He is the nominee, as we know.
Well, certainly interesting. I'm going to think about your math here, Steve, for a while. In fact, all day, because I think
this is a rerun, by the way. This is a rerun. This is a rerun of Ford Reagan 76. It's the exact same play. It's just the other side. The incumbent is a Democrat this time, not a appointed Ford, who had to take over for Nixon, did not win re-election against Carter. Carter gets blown out, and in comes Reagan for technically 12 years because of George Bush Sr., who screwed it up, in my opinion. But this is that. And there were spoilers who I could name in the mix, too, that kept Reagan off the ballot in the first attempt, which was 76, not 80, when he won.
Well, Steve, we're going to have to bring you back on the show just to talk about that. I really would love that. I would love a history lesson from both of you. All right, Steve, we're going to let you go right there only because we're out of time. That was the voice of Steve Abramowitz. He is the CEO of Heartland Journal. Steve also hosts the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast. Did I get everything there? You're also launching something today. Was that it?
That was it. .com.
All right. Good. I got it all in. All right. Thanks so much, Steve.